Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 939. Katie Levine, I see in your hand you were holding a giant community corkboard.
It has so many posts on it.
How did you bring that in?
You know, I carry it with me everywhere.
You really? That's a real commitment to the community. So what post-its will you be ripping off the community corkboard?
So I got one for our friends, Randy and Jason Sklar. They have a new documentary all about poop. Yeah, they do.
You said it so matter of fact.
It is.
They have a new documentary about poop.
Yeah, so here's what they have to say about it. This is an honest, funny, informative discussion about poop, a somewhat taboo subject about an activity that everyone does, yet few people talk about. By talking to comedians, doctors, and scientists, we try to determine if we can be more open about our poop practices. Yeah, as we hope to loosen people up about their poop hang-ups and laughing
hang-ups.
Hear hilarious stories and perspectives from people like Pete Holmes, Kumail Nanjiani, Aisha Tyler, Eric Stonestreet, Nick Swartzen, Rob Corddry, Nicole Byer, and many more. Poop Talk is available now on iTunes and VOD. We know we didn't make the shape of water here. We made the shape of toilet water.
Nice.
And you know what? We're proud of the discussion that arose. So check that out. I think it sounds really interesting. I'm very interested in poop.
Do you think they poop exactly the same?
Oh.
I wonder if that's genetic.
I don't know.
Or if that's learned.
Like, do they both have to poop at the same time in the morning every day?
Or if, like, one of them is pooping, the other one kind of feels it.
Like, oh,
is that
God,
weird?
What's going on?
The other one, if Randy's pooping, just Jason shit his pants? That's all I'm wondering.
I hope so. That would be kind of funny. Not that he shits his pants, but then he goes, oh, I got to go to the bathroom, too. And then I have one more. Chandler writes, I wanted to ask that you talk about my husband's EP on the community corkboard. He is extremely passionate about his music and has started producing music and DJing, and I've never seen him this happy, determined, or passionate about anything. His stage name is Sosla or Sosla. It's S-O-S-L-A, and you can follow him on all social media at Sosla Music. His EP is available on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, Google Play, Amazon. Plus, his EP cover is a cute sketch of our dog, so what could be better than that? Check him out, and if you live in the Austin area, follow him on social media and find out where he's going to be doing DJ sets.
Excellent. And then I also want to say that I've got some stand-up dates coming. I will be at Comedy Works in Denver at the beginning of April, and then Comedy on State in Madison, Wisconsin at the end of April.
Oh, awesome.
So just Google those places and come and get tickets. I love Denver. I went to high school. I went mostly to high school there, and then I moved. But Denver's great, and also Madison, Wisconsin is like one of the best comedy towns in the country. But those are two amazing clubs, Comedy Works and Comedy on State. So I'll be there with Mike Furman and April Richardson. Get tickets now at those websites that I should probably know if I were better at promoting my own stuff. I think we're going to start having some info in the next month or two about the ID10T Festival.
Oh, awesome.
Which is November 3rd and 4th.
At the Orange County Fairgrounds.
So that's that. This episode is Peter Serafinowicz, who is a brilliant writer, comedian, impersonator, actor. Everything. All around nice guy. He's currently on The Tick. He is The Tick, which is streaming on Amazon now. The first, I believe, 6 episodes aired at the end of last year. And then the remaining episodes just went up on Amazon. So they're up now. He's great. I love this man, and I was very happy that that tall drink of water, Peter Serafinowicz, came over to my house and we sat down. And soon we're gonna have like a podcast studio at the place I'm renovating. If you want to follow the renovations,
right?
I've been putting them on Instagram stories with the hashtag house shit, because I just wanted to document the renovation, and it's been really fun. So follow that.
Enjoy this
podcast, the ID10T podcast number 939. Oh, that has just such a nice symmetry to it. 939, a numerical palindrome with Peter Serafinowicz. Serafinowicz is the opposite of a palindrome. Katie, roll it.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
How are you?
I'm a bit, a little bit off, because this is great. I've got I've got a plastic Luke Skywalker tumbler of like, I think from the same sort of collection.
Yeah,
like
this
old
was
ones.
Yes, those are from the. It was a promotional thing that Burger King did, you know, forever ago, and so. My wife found those, and they just showed up one day. She's like, I got you this. And I was like, I married the right person.
Oh,
I really married the right person.
That's great.
How much Darth Maul stuff do you have?
Not a lot, really, which I suppose is fitting, really, because, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of Darth Maul in the movie, really, is there? But like,
he endured, though. People like Darth Maul. They still cosplay as him.
Yes, they do. Yeah. And I do have, my sister bought me a, from a car boot sale, which is, yeah, like a yard sale.
Right? Sure.
Do you have like a British to US English app that we could just play something just so I don't have to.
Car boot, flea market. Like it just says in a robotic voice.
She bought me for my birthday once this, it's like this life-size Darth Maul head made out of Lego, right?
Oh, wow.
It's pretty cool, you know. Slightly grubby,
sure,
right?
Sure,
Lego gets grubby.
Yeah.
And so I had that, and she bought it at this, like this car boot sale, and she said to the guy who made it himself, of his own design, who's a bit of a strange guy, as she was paying the guy, she said, my brother is he's the voice of Darth Maul. And he was like, no reaction. and it's like, I can kind of understand that. You know.
That could also just be him being British too, right? Just not really.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like an American would be like, what the fuck? What? Call him. Make him do the voice. Will he do my outgoing message? I mean, that's how we are over here.
That's how we are. We're all mingling now. We're all, you know, we're all the same, aren't we? Either side of... Do you think?
I don't know. I remember that first year that when Matt Smith and Karen Gillan and Arthur Darvill came over, right when they started doing Doctor Who... And there was this big premiere in New York, and they were floored because Matt was like, we did the one in England, and there it wasn't. But here in America, people are just like grabbing at him and flipping out. And they were not used to that.
Wow.
So okay. I think we do tend to, and I was like, yeah, we really get very into things here emotionally. So,
yeah. I, more so as well now, I think, more so than in the past in Britain. I tell you what, actually, like premieres, I think the ones they have in London tend to be, certainly now, like bigger than ones I've done in New York, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Not like I've done like huge ones in New York, but even I remember the like the Phantom Menace one was like, there were only... There were only like a couple of hundred people like outside the. It's a geographical thing as well because it was like a off Broadway cinema, so there's not like a huge place for you for everyone to hang out. Like,
right,
you know, at the Chinese theater or whatever. There's a, you know, you can close off the roads and whatever, and like but in Leicester Square in London. They just close that off all the time, and it's just packed with like it's the most crazy experience, you know, to do something like that.
Leicester Square, Union Square. I'm just trying to give people the American type of
Leicester Square.
Bird, maybe a lady or a bird. like, that would be an app that you'd play with for a day. Like you would play with that app for one day. You know, it might almost be worth it just to make it and go like, this is going to expire. Like in 24 hours, you're never going to open this again. But for one solid day, you will enjoy this app.
Yeah. Application or computer program. but yeah, I love I love that. I'm sorry. I know this is a.
You can talk about whatever you want. Peter's looking at the. I have these Empire Strikes Back glasses from Berg, and these are just the glasses that we use. Like we really actually use these. There's some stuff I feel like maybe you shouldn't touch, but they're glasses. They should be used. You know, like
I think my of you know with my sort of. Almost like a tenuous link to the Star Wars universe. My favorite thing to come out of it is that I became friends with Mark Hamill.
Oh yeah,
and what a lovely
isn't
guy.
He great?
What I mean, first of all, the loveliest man I've ever met, right? In any sphere, right? And I meet people in lots of spheres.
We're very sphere-based culture now.
Yeah, you know those big inflatable ones you put in the pool. And,
exactly.
I call them meeting spheres. And
bubbles.
But he is not only the sweetest man I've ever encountered, and his family as well. He's also incredibly funny, and he's. Bonkers as well, isn't he?
He's great, and he's the perfect guy to be who he is because he understands the world, he appreciates it, he knows what fandom is. Like he's not grossed out by oh, I got tired of these Star Wars fans. Like he is a fan, and the best case scenario is that a fan becomes a fan icon because they understand what it means to be a part of that community, and so he is. He uses his power well, I believe.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And another thing about that I found out only sort of later in life was what an incredibly skilled voice actor he is.
Yes.
And I hadn't realized that he did the voice for the Joker. It's like my favorite incarnation of the Joker.
Yeah, yeah, might be the definitive Joker. I think it's sort of back and forth between Hamill and then, of course, you know, Heath Ledger's version. People love that version. But Hamill, I think, might be kind of the definitive Joker.
I didn't know it from the cartoon. I knew it from playing the first Batman Arkham Asylum game, which I think was the first of those sort of Batman games. I remember I don't like cutscenes in games.
Right.
Are you a video gamer?
Yeah. There was a period about maybe 8 or 9 years ago where, you know, games like L.A. Noire, where you're like, well, this is just a movie. And occasionally I can stick my head in and make a choice. But in general, I'm just watching a long movie.
Yeah. A long, poor movie. I mean, that is how I feel about, like, you know, as much as the technical and design and all that, whatever. Innovation and there's so much brilliant stuff about like the Grand Theft Auto games. Those unskippable cutscenes make me want to go Grand Theft Auto on Rockstar Games headquarters in real life. No, I don't want to watch a shitty movie. If I wanted to watch a shitty movie, there are plenty of shitty movies. And like, you know, I just want to pretend that I'm in a world and I've got guns and rocket launchers and I can blow up cars and kill innocent people like anybody would want to.
Of course.
Without having to endure these ridiculous C-D grade dramas. Well, that's me. I'm not going to be employed.
Hey, did Mickey bring you that delivery? Hey, what are you talking about? I got it coming. Hey, well, I'm just saying the boss is getting really. Jesus Christ! I need to do something. I need to push a button,
skip,
please.
Skip. What is it? Is it Alt Tab? What do I do?
Okay, well, you know how the boss is. He's got his.
Oh no, it's going again! Oh my God!
Oh, what's that? You want to hear it again? Well, you know the boss. He's a tough one. You know. I just can't.
Mission failed. Okay, surely it will let me. Oh, you're fucking kidding me! And you gotta seriously, watch it again. Yeah, like oh my God,
it's your punishment not to fail the mission.
But anyway, go the Batman one. I remember sticking with the cutscenes because I think I don't know who plays Batman. It's someone who does a lot of those voices, and yeah, there's only so much you can do with like Batman, like,
right.
These days, you know. You know, you can go the what's his name?
Clooney.
The Christian Bale, Marge Simpson route.
Right. I'm Batman.
I'm Batman. Bart, stop hitting your sister.
What was that, Mr. Wayne?
Really, I'm not Mr. Wayne.
Julie Kavner is Batman. That would be... I would watch that. I would legit watch that. I would watch that.
I can't wait to get this cowl off. My hair is so squashed underneath it.
You know, I think at least if they were going to do that, Bruce Wayne's voice should have been like, hi. Like, he should have been like a, you know, it should have been such a dramatic... But they pitched it, like, they did effects to it for the Nolan ones, though, clearly.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they did, because...
Yeah. I mean, look, he's great. He's really, you know, look, these are all great, you know, but, like, I did like, you know, I thought the film was preposterous, that last Christopher Nolan Batman film.
Dark Knight Rises?
Is that what it was called? Yeah. The one with Bane in it?
Yes.
And I loved that. I went to see... Mission Impossible 3, maybe. Me and my wife bunked off from, you know, we both had like the afternoon to ourselves and we were like, let's go to the cinema. And
that means took a break.
Oh, yeah. Played hooky.
This app, I'm telling you, man, it's writing itself. It is writing itself. All you and I need to do is have a conversation for a day and just transition. That'll be it. We'll be overnight millionaires.
But do you remember? So anyway, Mission Impossible 3, which was brilliant, and it was like where Simon Pegg really kind of, his character suddenly really came into his own, you know. And but the added treat of this particular film was that they showed the first 10 minutes of this new Batman, the whole sequence where Bane is on the plane.
Right.
And I don't quite know what's going on, but this incredible, spectacular sequence happens. And I thought that was one of the most unbelievable things I'd ever seen. I thought his performance as Bane in that little bit, and also in the film, I thought it was that's one of my favorite things ever.
Yeah.
You know, in a movie that I really didn't like, in a movie that was... It was so... I mean, there's some amazing bits in it, but, like, it's 3 hours long, and, like, at one point... There is this like stakes kind of rise in these movies, and like there's one point where there is a deadline imposed of 3 months.
Right.
They say if X doesn't happen within 3 months, then this city is doomed. 3 months.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, okay. Let's see. When can we? What about next Tuesday? We can start to have a meeting about... we can really...
You know, there might be a problem when a lot of the movie is just Bruce Wayne watching the events on a television. He's like in the... He's in the pit and, you know...
I know. But look, I mean, I'm glibly, criticizing this, and I know how difficult it is to make any kind of piece of art, let alone something as complicated and as... you know, spectacular and everything that those films are, you know.
But in a 3-hour movie, you're like, there wasn't anything you could have cut it. You know, it's like, in 3 hours, you really? You know, I'm sure the first cut was like 9 hours long.
Yeah,
you know, they got to get it down in 3 is probably. But some of these like 3-hour long movies, I'm like, if your movie's 3 hours, there's too much going on.
Yeah. I'm not like a massive superhero fan, like buff, like I don't go and see all the Marvel universe things and DC. It's not like a requirement for me to do that. Like Griffin Newman, who plays Arthur in the Tick, he's like, you know, he buys comic books every week. He's a nerd, you know.
Yes.
He properly knows all these storylines, and he, you know, and is so familiar with the mythos of everything. And I'm kind of like, I was never, even as a kid, I was like not into that. However, I went to see Thor Ragnarok.
So good.
Oh my God. I think it's one of my top funny films of all time.
It's, yeah.
I took my son, who's got a very sophisticated sense of humor and is very funny himself, and his friend. The three of us went to see it, and what a joy it was to not only laugh at a funny film.
Yeah.
Because how often do you sort of think, yeah, well, funny films, there are lots of them, and therefore I must actually laugh whilst watching
right.
comedy films.
Right.
But it doesn't actually happen that often, really.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Especially if you're a comedy writer or a comedy person or you work in comedy, you always sort of map the like, okay, oh, I see where they, oh, that's clever. I see where they,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's got something to do with it, definitely. But I think even just a normal person would be like, you'd be hard pressed to think of like 20 films where you say, these make me laugh out loud, you know?
Yeah.
And that film, I laughed so much. I thought it was so imaginative. It was so interesting and it was exciting and the action was great and there's brilliant performances. But it was so funny.
Yeah.
So funny.
Did you see Taika's other movie, What We Do in the Shadows?
No, everyone has said, when I see that, it's going to be my favorite film.
It's great. Yeah. I think it's been like 2 years and it's been at the top of iTunes horror. Like it's a movie that people just keep going back to and keep going back to. It's really great. I think you would like it.
Oh, I'm definitely going to see that. Just on that subject of like funny films, though, do you know what I mean? Like about like, so those two films, what are another two films of the last like couple of years that you've watched that have made you laugh out loud?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, there was a handful of years ago, there was a movie called Black Dynamite that made me laugh.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
because it was very and when we it was right around the time we first started doing the podcast, actually, because I sought out the director, a guy named Scott Sanders, and had him on and had the cast on, and because I wanted as many people to see it, but it was. You know, it was so brilliantly done, and in the way that, like, when you first saw Airplane or Naked Gun, and you're like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like, you know.
Yes.
Yes.
And I guess, and it was, you know, in the same way as Airplane and Naked Gun, which I love, but, like, it was parodying a specific genre, but also it had its own silly sense of humor as well.
And it didn't wink at the camera at all.
No.
And, you know, he was saying that when he directed that movie, he had the actors come up with characters in their heads for who they were as actors. So he was like, oh, so Black Dynamite was being played by a guy who was probably a linebacker for a football team. And in the 70s, they were like, hey, you're a famous football player. Let's put you in this movie. So they had characters who were playing characters. And it was genius because
it
had them all kind of really commit to it and not be like, isn't this crazy what we're doing here? Which is, you know, the death of any good comedy is when the performances are aware of what they're doing.
See, I found that a bit with the Naked Gun movies. I found, and as particularly as they went on,
Definitely 2 and 3. There's no question.
But like nothing compares to like my. I think if I had to choose one like desert island TV show, it would be Police Squad.
Oh, so good! Still amazing. So straight. It was really when. You know, and obviously this is not meant as a dig at all. I mean, I worshipped Leslie Nielsen. But at a certain point, he became very aware. In the beginning, he was a very serious actor. And he did all those, like, episodic cop shows and everything.
Yeah.
And so that's why they chose him, because he was just so funny playing those roles. It just so happened that the context was comedic. But at a certain point, he became aware, and he started playing the comedy. Like, hey, this is all funny. And then it's kind of fell apart a little bit. Still... You know, some of the best comedy performances of all time.
I would say, you know, in his defense, I reckon like it's more to do with the directors and the writers
sure.
pushing him that
sure,
way.
Sure, 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 sure.
You know, because he just had that thing that deadpan. I mean, it's the funny when I saw that as a kid, Police Squad.
In color. I nearly
had an aneurysm. Or maybe I did. It was like I was like, oh my God, people have actually made this. This, oh my God, this is incredible. I couldn't. I remember talking about it at school the next day. Nobody had seen it. You know?
I knew one of the writers from that show. I worked with him a few years ago.
Who?
His name was Tino Insana.
Yeah,
he unfortunately passed away long ago. But I worked on an animated show with him. We both did voices on an animated show, and so I would grill him for Police Squad questions, and you know, he would say, "Yeah, you know, we'd sit down and watch all these 70s cop shows, and then we would just try to figure out like what was the how to escalate that." But they really used the real cop shows as their source material, but you know, in as much as when you're watching comedy and you sort of like can map a joke, there are jokes in Police Squad where I'm like, I don't know how the fuck they got. Like the one of my favorite jokes on all television is just it's so weird. It's Drebin going, "So I went to one of those all-night wicker stores." And they go to the wicker store, and there's people, like, hordes of people in the middle of the night walking out with wicker furniture. Where does that come from?
One of those 24-hour wicker joints.
Yeah, where the fuck does that come from?
And you see, like, two on opposite sides of the street, like, that have got names. And, like, oh, my God. I mean, I'm so glad. That's maybe, like, my favorite thing in it. It was driving past one of those 24-hour wicker joints.
And I don't know if you can still do that today, because it was so much like no one had really done that in that way before, and now so much is derivative of that it might have just that those waters might be overfished. I don't know, but it seems.
I just want to that point you've made. I just want to ask you something about in a sec, but I just want to tell you another one of my favorite things, because Leslie Nielsen is a huge hero of mine.
Yes.
And my brother bought me a signed 10x8 of Leslie Nielsen once for my
translation 8x10.
The guy who I love as well, my other favorite in that is that actor Peter Lupus, who plays Nordberg,
right,
who famously was played by O.J. Simpson,
right,
in the movie for like movie reasons, you
I
know?
Guess.
But although he was actually pretty good in the movie, you know, O.J. Simpson was funny in the movie, and
They played. I don't know. I haven't heard from him in a while. They played to his acting strengths, which is that he had none, and that's what kind of weirdly worked about it. But yeah, the guy.
Peter Lupus, who's Nordberg. I mean, you know the episode where they open the locksmith.
Yeah.
And
it's like all the key jokes in the background.
There's all the key,
turkeys, Francis Scott Keys.
Yeah, and so there's all that in the background. But the thing that just makes me crazy with delight is that so they go undercover as locksmiths in this neighborhood, and Nordberg, who's like his assistant, starts taking the business really seriously. And comes up with like, as Frank's like thinking, maybe I better meet this Mr. whatever. And Norberg's going, yeah, I'm thinking of maybe doing a 2-for-1 key deal. And he is so funny, that dude. He is so funny. And I feel like there's a little bit of Peter Lupus in my head as I'm doing The Tick.
That's a great to know, because I watched the first six episodes of The Tick, and I loved it, and you were great in it, and I was bummed that they broke up the season. I'm like, I want to see the rest of it now. Like, I got impatient, but I'm glad it's coming back. But The Tick definitely has that. He's just very earnest, and he's very honest, and he really, everything he does is, it's just that same, I'm so fascinated to hear you say that, because I completely understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's also a little bit like, there's another reference for it, which is another big hero, a big American hero of mine is Phil Hartman.
Yes.
And who I only really got to know about through The Simpsons, because we don't get SNL. It's like one big like America-sized hole that we just don't get, you know, in the UK. So like things like Wayne's World would come out in the cinemas and we'd be like, what is Wayne's World?
Right.
And so I knew Phil Hartman from doing Lionel Hutz and Troy McClure. You know, The Sims is one of my favorite things that humans have ever created. And his voice was like, I was like, who is this dude doing this? These characters, Lionel Hutz. And, and then when it was only when I found, I only found out about his, I only discovered his work when I heard that he died.
Right.
And it was just, oh God, it was awful to, this guy was killed by his wife, and then I found out it's this guy who I love does these voices, and you know, I really connected with him. You know, I can really, I don't know, there's some kind of thread that I bet, like, if I'd ever met him, we would find similar things funny, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just know the things that he picks on are things that make me laugh as well. And then I got a VHS of the best of Phil Hartman, and I was like, fuck this
guy. He was such a committed... He was one of those guys that whatever he was doing in the scene, you would watch him, and he would just lock in and find it and make something... He could make anything funny.
He's... yeah, he's unbelievable. He is... I think there's a film where... There's this one sketch where he's playing... Who is the guy in Airplane? Not Leslie Nielsen, the other guy with the white hair. Peter Graves,
Peter,
right?
Graves, yeah. Peter Graves.
Yeah, so he's doing a sketch where he's playing Peter Graves, I think showing John Lovitz around, or... Like, did Peter Graves host some, like, science show or history?
He hosted... Was it a classic movie show? He might have... I'm Peter Graves. It might have been a classic movies show. Katie, what is it? Yeah, it would have been like Turner Classic Movies, or...
It was Phil Hartman doing Peter Graves, and like there's some... He just kept going, oh, all right.
As as John Lovitz is showing him these funny things. I can't remember what they were, but they were very funny. And things kept going wrong, and he's... And so tell me about this. All right. And then
they definitely got like that in me, you know, but like...
You did a Simpsons voice too, didn't you? Do I remember hearing you?
No.
I thought you had at one point.
No.
Stupid Chris.
No, I did go to a... I did go to... me and my wife, when we were doing pilot season... like 10 years ago, 11 years ago, whatever, I became friends with Matt Groening,
mm-hmm.
and also this brilliant writer who sadly passed away extremely young, Don Payne. I don't know whether you ever knew this guy.
Oh, I didn't know.
Such a lovely guy. My God, he was so lovely and really funny. He was one of the head Simpsons writers, and we went to Simpsons table read, and that was one of the experiences of my life. Have you ever?
I've never been.
Dude, it's like it's just on the Fox lot, you know, and it's a room like not like I mean this room is beautiful, this beautiful opulent room. It's like the same kind of size as this, but like just like a vanilla sort of office with a table this kind of size, just like officey office, and then like seats around the back walls. We got there at like 1 o'clock, and me and Sarah, like, I mean, it's my favorite thing ever, you know, me and Sarah, so nervous. And we're both actors, and we meet people, we, you know, you know what it's like, you know, but there are certain people that...
Some people are just in your molecules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Hamill, you know, yeah. Like I still can't get over, you know, whenever I speak to him, I'm always like, what am I doing? You know? we sat there, and I remember the writers were in the room first. It was like 12:30 in the afternoon. The writers came in. Don came over, so sweet, got us a coffee and made us feel welcome, and then
then the first cast member to come in was Julie Kavner.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm Batman.
Yeah, but it was. It was like, and she had a baseball cap on. And she came in and went, "Hi, everybody." Like, not doing a voice. That's just Julie Kavner's voice, yeah. You know? And it was, like, amazing. It was just like, and then suddenly Kelsey Grammer.
Jesus.
Comes, yeah, it was a sideshow.
What a treat.
So I was sitting behind Kelsey and... hello, you know, and it was like, oh my god, because I love Sideshow Bob as well, and Kelsey Grammer's voice is amazing, and then Yeardley Smith comes in, Nancy Cartwright, and then then Dan Castellaneta, right, yep. Was sitting opposite us, and like, how? I mean. I mean, they're all sort of extraordinary performers, but like Dan Castellaneta, he's like the way he's got this tiny little slot of a mouth, this little mouth that these huge people come out of.
Yeah,
just and she be Homer and Grandpa, you know, doing all that. It was just, it was like I was in heaven, you know. It was like, and Harry Shearer. Who was pointedly made the point of like he was the last one to arrive. but then like he was sitting like just there and doing Mr. Burns and Smithers, and you think he's been doing that for however many years. He should have some kind of super Oscar just for doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. And Matt Groening as well he's such a sweet.
I've met him a few times, and he's always so nice, and he's so sweet. And I feel like at a certain point in the conversation, I drop the ball and I fan out too much. Like every time I see him, I'm like, you know what? This time I'm gonna be cool. And then at a certain point, I'm like, oh, that's really great. Do you want to hang out sometime? Like it just comes out because. He drew a cartoon series that were in kind of the alternative newspaper.
Life
in Hell.
Life in Hell. Yeah. Yes, right.
And that when I was the perfect age for it. I was in high school, and it was, you know, like that whole series with Bongo and Akbar and Jeff, and I just it was so meaningful to me. And yeah. Of course, I was 18 when The Simpsons started, and so I was the perfect age for that. I mean, everything about it was so. And so he is so responsible. I mean, obviously, it's a big team of people, but ultimately, the seeds, what he created, are so responsible, not just for me as a person, but just, you can see so much derivative stuff from, you know... style of comedy just it created an entire... I can't even imagine what comedy would be without Simpsons.
At the time... At the time of this table read, I did a voice, I did a character on South Park, right? Which I was just floored to be asked to do. Yeah, so it was, I did a voice on South Park and I'd met Matt Stone, totally nervous of him, someone again who's like I hold in like, you know, he seems so like formidable and
like the nicest dude.
yeah and but still, you know, he's like the most incredibly intelligent and witty and you know, but and I remember around it, so it was around this like couple of weeks, they said a thing that was really getting my goat at the time was how like Family Guy was just such a ripoff of The Simpsons, and at that time they just kind of switched them round. So it was like Family Guy was like the number one Fox show,
right?
And The Simpsons had been sidelined when it was like this, in my opinion, this cruder version of The Simpsons, and that still, you know, has had lots of funny stuff to it, but it was like a kind of crude like cracked magazine to Mad Magazine.
What an interesting analogy. And, oh my god.
And
in a way, I don't know, it really annoyed me, right? And I remember speaking both to Matt Groening about it and to Matt and Trey about it as well. And they both agreed. And I was like, have you ever met Matt Groening? And they said, well, we saw him once at like the Emmys or whatever, and we never really hung out, you know. So I said, well, look, let's all meet up. And I arranged this dinner, right? It was me, Edgar Wright, who I know you know.
Of course.
Right? So me, Edgar, Matt Groening, my wife, Sarah, and Peter Bainham. Do you know the writer Peter Bainham?
No.
Writes a lot with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh, okay.
Like an incredible comedy. He's written like 100 amazing things. And Matt and Trey. And we went out for dinner in Santa Monica and talked about like how they, you know, like how Matt and Trey make their show in 5 days and an episode of The Simpsons takes 18 months from
right.
start to finish, you know, and all this stuff. And they'd never, and we got talking about this whole Family Guy thing and how fucking, you know, it was like, I could say it because like I didn't have to sort of feign politeness or like, you know, I didn't need to have the professional courtesy of saying, oh no, everything can exist, you know, it's all cool. I was kind of stirring it up, you know. And then that was the arc of the next two South Park episodes, was where Cartman and Bart Simpson team up
right.
and go to
they find
destroy
the manatees,
the Family Guy and the manatees with the beach balls,
right,
where
right,
the,
right.
That all sort of the germ for that all started from that dinner, and I just sat there and watched it happen.
Did they kind of nerd out over each other a bit?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. And yeah, it was.
You're
yeah.
a dream weaver. That is a dream weaver thing to do, is to create that happen. And were you tempted at all? You're like, I should just hit record on my phone. I won't share this with anyone, but I just need to document that this happened in some way.
Oh, do you know, I can remember it all so clearly. And yeah, it was, I don't know. It was just like, I just thought, hey.
You know, it's funny to hear this from you because you were so involved in such an influential part of British comedy. I mean, you and your brother-in-law and
my brother and my sister are both in like my sister Helen, who's Graham Linehan's
yep.
wife. Her show with Sharon Horgan it's just won loads of awards and has been commissioned for two more series already, you know?
Oh, my God.
My brother is doing... He is developing stuff with Simon and Nick's new company and Simon Pegg and
yep.
Frost.
Yep.
And don't know if you're aware of it either. And, and yeah, I mean, they're doing amazing.
What a great group. It's yeah. such a great group. And it, you know, it, Graham wrote on Brass Eye.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
But you also worked on Space, didn't you? I mean, it's like, there's so much fantastic. So, you know, it's got to be somewhat, and maybe you don't think of it this way, but in the way that you are talking about these people, you know, Mark and Matt and Phil Hartman and Police Squad, you are that to a generation of people too.
Well, in a you know, in a certain very sort of thin, you know, slice of the pie, you know, in a niche-y kind of way, I suppose, in a very small way to some people. Yeah, you know, I'm part of a similar sort of thing, I suppose. But yeah, what I want to know is, like, I mean, when I was like doing comedy in like for instance, when Spaced was out and me and Robert Popper were doing Look Around You,
which is one of the greatest. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just need to tell people, if you've never seen Look Around You, and I'm guessing that if you listen to this podcast, you probably have seen it, but even if you have, it's worth watching again. No one had done that when those came out, to satirize those fucking science films that you were forced to watch in school.
Yeah. I mean, and really, it's like the closest analogy to it is Police Squad, because like...
For science films.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's the same. And we, you know, we just had the same kind of jokes as in Police Squad.
So...
But I remember at that time, so you mentioned like Brass Eye and Chris Morris and Alan Partridge and Spaced, and then there was like... You know, it's like 20 more things that I could say from that time that was like a real golden age.
The day to day.
Yeah, the day to day. Yeah, I mean, and like, so I think what do you think now is like good, like new comedy? What's like?
I love Baskets, Zach Galifianakis' show on FX.
Oh, I don't know that. What is it?
It's, if you read it on paper, you'd go, well, there's no way this can work.
Yeah.
Zach plays twin brothers in the show.
Okay.
But his main character is basically this kind of inept guy who went to French clowning school, and he has to move back to Bakersfield, California. And his brother, who has a completely different accent, is really cantankerous and... kind of an asshole, and his mom is played by Louis Anderson,
right?
And this other lady that is a great comic named Martha Kelly. And on paper, you go like, "How the fuck is this show going to work?" And then you watch it; and it's one of the most beautiful things on television. So, Baskets, Rick and Morty, I think, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been on.
I have been on. Yeah, and I still haven't really watched the show.
I think it's one of the best comedies
everyone
ever.
Everyone says to me, yeah, Rick and Morty. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even though, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I've seen recently. It's hard. It's hard to make comedy. That's why, you know, going back to Thor, that was something that really stood out. Like, and also it had a heart to it, you know?
Yeah.
It had a real sort of good vibe to it, you know?
Yeah, which is a real key element, I think. A comedy should, you know, if something is just too indulgent that without having some sort of a heart to it. And that's why, you know, Baskets has a real heart to it. And Rick and Morty has a heart. Rick and Morty is, as a comedy, I think is one of the most poignant, like, family dramas on television, which is so strange. But there's a real authentic, like, dysfunctional family tale at the center of it, which I think is part of what makes it work, because it's very authentic and, you know,
I tell you what I thought as well. F is for Family. I've seen some.
Oh, yeah, the Bill Burr show.
Yeah, I really like that.
People like BoJack Horseman, though. I haven't watched a ton of it yet.
I haven't seen that, but...
Yeah, I hear it's amazing.
That's Will Arnett, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, who I love.
Paul F. Tompkins is on that show. A lot of really great funny people are on that show.
You know, just a really obscure one. One of my all-time favorite things is Xavier Renegade Angel. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, God, that is the freakiest... That's written. That's Vernon Chapman.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
God, what is his writing partner called? I can't remember anyway.
He did the Wondershowsen.
Wondershowsen, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Those guys. So, my God, I don't know if I could describe it to you, but I would just say, just get the first season of it. I think it's like 10. Like 10-minute episodes.
Where is it? Is it on...
I don't even know. You get it on iTunes. It's all done in 3D animation in that sort of 90s vaporwave style.
Right.
BoJack Horseman sort of reminded me of it because the main character is like a sort of shamanistic kind of... like Walker Texas Ranger guy, but he's... does he have a horse's head, or can you get a picture of him up? He's got a beak. That's right. He's got long hair. He's got a beak, and he's got his companion, who is his hand, is called Snake Hand. And his legs are on backwards, right? So when he walks, he just, it's like he's, that's why he looks a bit like a horse, because his legs are on backwards.
That's fantastic. Okay, so
Xavier, Renegade Angel.
So there's that.
That's from like 10 years ago, and that's one of the most bizarre, and one of the things that has had me like almost vomiting silently on the floor in laughter, because I've never seen anything like it.
There's another show that I'm loving, because I don't know if you... Were you an SCTV fan at all? Did you get SCTV?
No, but I know bits of...
So there's a show called Schitt's Creek, and it's a Canadian show, but it's we get it here in the States.
Okay.
And it's Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, yeah, right.
And they're just... And everyone on the show is great. Chris Elliott's also on the show.
Oh, I love him.
And it's a study in watching a group of incredible comedic performers all, like, just bring to the table, like, their all of their strengths and work beautifully together. And it's so well done. So Schitt's Creek is a great show. That's in the third season right now.
That reminds me of Simon Pegg getting me once... introducing me to Waiting for Guffman,
which
became one of my favorite films. And just, you know, all that, you know, that what you were saying about those people, because it shares a lot of that cast. And then there's another huge hero of mine. Oh my God, and I've forgotten his name. Who plays Catherine O'Hara's husband in that? What's his name?
Eugene Levy?
No.
Oh, you mean in Waiting for Guffman?
Waiting for Guffman.
Is it Fred Willard?
Fred Willard.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is one of my gods, you know? And it's strange as people age, often they can lose their funniness.
Oh, yeah, he didn't lose it.
I mean, he just got funnier and funnier.
Did you ever watch The Old Fernwood Tonight?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And yeah, I've got tapes of that, and like, you know, but like, fucking hell, that guy, Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
When did you discover that your voice was superior to everyone else on the planet? Because you have the best.
Oh, thanks, man.
It is legitimately. The best, like, if I could describe, like, what's the perfect voice? I go, it's got to be Peter Serafinowicz. Like, it's the perfect tone, timbre, the right accent. Everything about it activates every pleasure center in my brain for how a voice should be.
Stop.
Is it real, or did you concoct it somehow?
I don't know. I guess I cultivated it a bit. I was always. Like a mimic, you know, some people just do that thing. Most people do it to an extent, you know?
Oh, yeah, I heard your McCartney with the Matt Berry song.
I did this... Oh, God. Yeah, I like... There's part of me that gets a thrill out of doing artistic things that require insanely stupid amounts of effort for... and then putting like huge parameters, too many parameters on yourself in order to you know, to have a crazy idea and then, but to carry it out requires like way too much effort, but yet you do it.
Right.
You know? A bit like, it's one of the reasons I love Team America, mm-hmm. right? Is like an example of that. That is like one of the greatest examples of what if we did a sort of satire of America as it is in the world, but we do it in like Thunderbirds.
Right.
You know that thing that Americans don't really know about, right? Thunderbirds. You know the marionettes, Thunderbirds. It was only really popular in England, right? Yeah. Okay. So and we build with these puppets, and then we have to not only we have to build like entire film sets. We have to our costume designer has to tailor miniature costumes and stitch miniature with like really, you know, all these considerations, you know, it took them years to make, and it's hilarious. I'm so pleased that they did and the sacrifices they made for it. But like I like when people go to absurd lengths like that show Xavier, right? When you watch that, you'll think, you know, but one thing I just did I did last year was I'm a big Beatles fan, and I did this thing where Sergeant Pepper, A Day in the Life, right? Mm-hmm. So you have the John bit at the start, the two John verses, and then he goes, having read the book, and then I'd love to turn you on, and then it kind of goes into the orchestral crescendo, and then we go up to that thing, and then we go onto the Paul, the little mid-late vignette of woke up, fell out of bed, dragged a comb across my head, you know, that mm-hmm. that bit.
I've heard it.
And yes, and when I was a teenager, I remember thinking, I wish that bit went on longer, you know. It's like, I want to know what happens to the guy, you know. I want to know what, like, you know, it's like I'm just getting to know this guy, and he's like on his bus to work. Where's he going, you know? And then we're back into the song, which it's not one of my favorite songs, you know. It's a great song, but like. Anyway, what I did was...
You wanted to have a real day in the life.
Yes, so I... when Beatles Rock Band came out about six years ago, and you know, it's weird how those games have fallen out of fashion, you know, those Guitar Hero kind of games. But this was like the Beatles estate, they got like... Giles Martin, George Martin's son, to remaster and separate all the audio stems of all the songs. Jeez. So that they could use them in this game. And then they ended up online, and I got hold of them. So I've got, like, you know, there are like 40 or so Beatles songs that you can just hear. You can take the vocals out, you can take the bass out, whatever, you know. For me, it's great because, like, you know, I have this little hobby of like retooling Beatles songs, and so I got that middle eight bit, and then I looped it, and I wrote this thing like in the same meter and in the same style of. It's called A Full Day in the Life. So in the original song on the album, the song is like I think 5-ish minutes, I think, something like that. My version is 13 minutes.
Did you post that anywhere?
I posted it briefly on YouTube, and it got taken down immediately because of...
I wonder if we could post that at the end of the podcast. Would you let us post it at the end of the podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Fuck yes. I mean, it's satire. I don't think we're going to get in trouble for it because it's comedy satire.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's just up for a, you know... I did actually... I sent it to... Giles Martin, and I, because he's George Martin's
yeah.
son, and he did the brilliant remix Love album,
right?
And, you know, he's fucking amazing, and I said to him, you know, I've sort of done this as a tribute to your dad, which was because I did it just after George Martin had died, and I said, you know, because I'm such a huge fan of him, and like. You know, I'm one of these people who think the Beatles are underrated, right? And
right.
It sounds glib, right? But it's really true, you know? And I said, anyway, I've done this thing. I'd love to know what you think. I've never, ever
heard. Oh, no. Never. That's ever. A weird thing. Because you're like, did he not like it? Did he not get it? Did he just not listen to it? I went out on a limb. I went out on a limb.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we got to add it to the thing. I've just gotten a note that I think you have to be somewhere else.
I don't want
to abruptly end the podcast because, honestly, I feel like I could talk to you for like 6 hours straight about comedy and stuff. And I really hope that you come back on whenever you can so we can just keep fucking around about stuff.
I'd love to.
We became Twitter pals like at the beginning days of Twitter. And I've always had such a fondness for you and your work. And you're such a nice guy.
Yeah,
and,
likewise,
and so I really, it's so rare that you seem to be on this side of the globe because you seem to be all over the place. But I would love to just hang out again. So please let me know the next time you're around.
Definitely.
Even if we don't record, we can just hang out like people, which is a crazy idea and not documented at all.
I'd love to do that. I mean, yeah, I'd love to. I am actually back in like a couple of weeks or 3 weeks or something. But
great.
But are you a massive Beatles nerd then as well? Are you?
Yeah, Paul was on the podcast a couple years ago.
Wow, okay.
And he was great.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah,
I love him.
Massive. I mean, I've bought at auctions. I have cells from Yellow Submarine.
I've got one as well. Yeah, I've got one.
Come on, I've got one of Jeremy.
God.
Jeremy and then all the Beatles walking away. Another great story is like, yeah, they didn't want to fucking do it, so they just got people to voice them. Like,
yeah,
and then it turned out to be like the really good Beatles movie.
Yeah, I could tell you my story of like the remake that we did with Robert Zemeckis that we did like 2 days filming on.
Can you tell it in a minute so your publicist doesn't get mad at me?
No.
Shit.
But like next time.
Be continued. God damn it. All right, we got to write that down. And then earlier on, you had asked me, you said, oh, I want to ask you a question. When I said something about overfishing comedy waters, you said I was going to ask you a question.
Oh,
do you remember what it was?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I should mention, though, Watch the Tick. Though.
Watch the Tick. Is it back? Is it back now?
It's, yeah, the entire, the 12 episodes and from the 23rd of February, the entire 12 episodes of the first series are on. It's great. I mean,
it's so much fun.
You know, I think it's great.
And even if you watch the Patrick Warburton Tick, I think you would not. I don't think you can't like one and not the other, because I really enjoyed this one a lot.
Yeah.
I really thought you guys did a great job.
Well, thanks, man.
And I'm excited to watch the back six episodes because it's only a half hour, right? It burns through pretty fast.
Yeah.
And then I watched them. I was like, Where's that? I look online, they're like, oh, it's not going to come out for people. I'm like, where was it? We're in the internet age. I need everything immediately now. But thank you for coming here. And please, I mean it, anytime you want to come back.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Well, maybe soon. I'd totally be up for that. It'd be great.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Translation.
Enjoy your sausage roll.
I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat. Made take the bus in seconds flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. Somebody spoke and I went into a dream. Missed my stop, ran downstairs, but forgot to pay the fare. The conductor chased me down the street. Oi! With blistered feet, I staggered into work. Morning, boss, sorry I'm late. Never seen him so irate. If it happens again, you're on your way. Now I want those accounts by the end of the day. Fed a sheet into the slot. Typewriter became hot.
Ow.
Jean, this machine is on the blink. She said with a wink, it's only out of ink. Typed a page, then number two. Only 84 more to do. Never get it done in time, said Jean. I know what you mean, could you lend me a hand? She was off like a shot. By 10 to 12, she'd done the lot. Gave her a hug, she said thanks a bunch. Now won't you take me to lunch, it's what a gentleman would do. She tapped her foot and cleared her throat. I helped her into her coat. She grabbed my arm and marched me across the floor. Slammed the door, the boss gave her a frown. Tried to find a place to eat. She led the way to Regent Street. There's a lovely little place on the corner here. I thought to myself, this looks a little dear. Bonjour, how do you do? Could I have a table for two? He looked in his book and I told him my name. He said, that's a shame, you're so absolutely full. Dug my hand into my coat. Slipped the maitre a note. He said, merci, I see what I can do. And we pushed past the queue and he showed us to our seats.
Et voilà, bon appétit.
Jean marveled at the venue. She could barely lift the menu. Oh, thank you so much, this is such a treat. And I pretended to eat cause my beef was undercooked. She leaned across, spilled champagne. Completely soaked her quiche Lorraine. The waiter rolled his eyes and replaced her food. Jean said how rude, but I thought he had a point. She stood up, sat on my lap. Jean, I'm not that sort of chap. Now I appreciate your help, but you're not my type. And I lit my pipe, and she ran away in tears. Paid the bill, walked outside. Felt ashamed that Jean had cried.
Jean!
I walked round the block and shouted out for Jean, but she was nowhere to be seen, so I wandered back to work. Fed up, slightly full, stumbled past the dog and bull. Fancied a drink after all that grub, so I ducked into the pub and got myself a pint. At the bar, a neat old man introduced himself as Stan.
Hello, Stan.
We had a nice little chat, then he started on the walk. And I got pretty bored, then I noticed the time.
Oh, charming.
Was this the street that we crossed? Began to realize I was lost. I ended up by the restaurant again. Then I heard Big Ben, it can't be 3 o'clock. Hailed a cab to Savile Row. Gov, you sure that's where you want to go? If I'm not there soon, I'll get the sack. So I jumped in the back and we drove for 60 feet. I'd no idea it was here. I was actually quite near. I'm unfamiliar with this part of town, I said. He shook his head and reversed into a bin. Gently closed the office door. Tiptoed across the floor. I was crouching down, not wanting to be seen. There was no sign of Jean, but then I spotted the boss. He was slumped across his desk, looking quite grotesque. I finished those accounts, I said. And he lifted his head, he his face looked rather grim. What's the deal with you and Jean? I said, I don't know what you mean. Don't lie to me, lad, what's going on? And I said, hold on, and he grabbed me by the neck. Couldn't move or take a breath. Felt alarmingly near death. The boss made a face, then released his grasp. I let out a gasp and crumpled to the floor. I think she wants to make me jealous. She's always flirting with the fellas. She's upset, I don't want to tie the knot. I said, why not? And saw the picture on his desk. That's Elaine, he said through tears. We've been married 18 years. Oh, how could I throw it all away? Didn't know what to say when his telephone rang. He pressed his ear up to the phone. I said, you want to be alone? I think he said yes, so I went back to the chair. The accounts weren't there, just a massive pile of scraps. She'd put the lot into the shredder, and to think that I had fed her. The boss was still preoccupied, so I snuck outside, I might as well go home. At the stop, stood in line, waiting for the number 9.
Number 9?
The conductor glared from the window of the bus. To avoid any fuss, I decided to walk. Down the road, I had to stop at the local record shop. They were playing music very loud. Asked a girl in the crowd, hey love, what's going on? She made me feel like a leper. Haven't you heard of Sergeant Pepper? The album was released today, and she turned away to listen to the song. Thought it was good, but a little bit slow. I said, gotta go, I have to feed the cat. Got home, took off my shoes. Your poor feet all red and bruised. My little toe had begun to swell. Then I heard the bell, somebody's outside. Pair of ladies at my door, with the bloke from the second floor. He has a great head of hair but wonky teeth. I think he's called Keith, but I'm not 100%. Fancy coming for a drink? I briefly pause to think. I'll see you down the pub in half an hour. Gonna jump in the shower, I need to wash my feet. Watch them walk on up the path. I thought I'd really like a bath. I turned on the taps and filled her up. And looking up, saw a tin upon the shelf. Aromatic bathing salts. Happy Christmas, love, Nan and Walt. I tried to prise open the rusty tin, but the whole lot fell in, it was probably too much. Fancy perfume filled my nose. Frankincense and rose. I wonder if I'll smell too feminine. Should I put some lemon in? There's some left in the fridge. So relaxed by the aroma, almost fell into a coma. When I opened my eyes, the bath was cold, and my hands looked old, wrinkly and pale. Stepped out onto the cat. She'd been nibbling on the mat. I gave her sardines and brushed my teeth. I thought, poor old Keith, if that's actually his name. Pulled the plug, hung up my towel. I think that was an owl. I looked at the clock, it was very late. 2:28, should try to hit the sack. Tucked up, I should be tired, but my head was feeling wild. I was wide awake, but strangely calm. I set my alarm and I went into a dream.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.